If you would like to work directly with Dr. Cole to maximize your sleep quality with a comprehensive sleep coaching program, or if you're concerned that you have sleep apnea, or simply just want a second opinion consultation, she's now available to see patients in New Jersey, New York, California, and Georgia, with more states coming soon. Please visit oak.care/sleep for a complete list of telemedicine services with transparent pricing. You deserve rapid access to quality sleep care with a physician you can trust to have your back every step of the way on your journey to better sleep.
Hi, I'm Dr. Allison Cole, sleep medicine specialist and bona fide chronic insomniac. Welcome to the Sleep is My Waking Passion podcast. Remember, knowledge is empowerment, and if applied correctly, it can help you biohack your way to a better night of sleep, just like I did. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sleep is My Waking Passion podcast. You know who I am. I am your host. And today I am joined by Jackie Lovett. She is a BSN, so she is a nurse. She actually has extensive experience. She worked overnight, night shifts, in the OBG floor, okay, where everybody has their babies, for 23 years, she was telling me, and she has now switched over to more of like a remote type position. And I met her because she is part of the Lane Norton coaching team, or the BioLane coaching team. Lane Norton, many people have heard of him. He's all over the internet. I actually got introduced to the whole BioLane program through my friend Marissa, who's a dietitian. So she's like, you know, Allison, if you're looking to improve your diet, this is one of the conversations we had toward the end of COVID, because all of us were eating like crap or barely eating, which was my case, because I'm the opposite of a stress eater. I'm like a stress, no appetiter. And you'd think I'd be a wraith based on that, but no, not my body type. My body type wants to be curvy. That's how I'm rolling. So Jackie and I have been working together basically for the past year or so. One of the things that I've learned from you, Jackie, is basically how to appreciate what nutrients I need to have. How do I get back into exercising? I've had some injuries over the past year and just stress with life changes and everything. And you've really helped coach me through that to the point where I really kind of feel like I have a good relationship with food. So I was so excited when you agreed to be on the show with me to really kind of shed light on what's really the truth about this quote-unquote concept of dieting and weight loss, and what are the targets that we should really be focused on, because you really helped me sort of gain confidence that I was moving in the right direction. And again, part of it's just like longevity and reassessing what our goals are. So do you want to introduce yourself, or is anything else you want people to know about you other than you're awesome and I'm so excited? Hooray!
Oh, well, thank you so much for that very kind introduction. I appreciate that. And yes, Allison and I have been working, I think it's almost 2 years now, and it's been a great journey, and it's very rewarding to see that change in my clients, because yes, you came to me very much with a body composition goal, wanting to lose some weight. Through that journey, your mindset really changed, right? Which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And an issue I see a lot is people focus so much on the number on the scale. They are obsessed with the number on the scale, and that really doesn't tell the whole story. The whole story is really, how much muscle mass do you have? How much body fat do you have? How do your blood markers look? So the number on the scale is not going to tell us how healthy you are. It's just so much more than that, right? There's so much more data points we need to look at. So diet culture, which is pushing being as thin as you are, doing these crash diets, that is not the way to go. That is not the healthy way to lose weight. And I really want to emphasize that now as we head into January, where a lot of people are going to have goals to lose some weight. I just want to tell your viewers, please don't do any crazy dieting. Don't do any of these fat loss hacks, because you will end up really going backwards in the long run. You may lose a lot of weight initially, but the problem with that, if you don't do it correctly, you're going to lose a lot of muscle. And that's going to really impact you in the long term. So we want to really preserve that muscle mass while we're dieting. And there's a very strategic way in doing that.
Can you talk a bit about this whole concept of body mass index? there is utility to it, which is because it's been established and it's been around for so long. But really, there are a lot of limitations. I think it's one of those things where we look for a marker that we can follow in studies where we're looking at, okay, what's the association between quote-unquote obesity and such. I do think that if you're not looking at the person properly or not factoring in certain things, there's been data that shows that you could actually kind of skew your viewpoint. So can you talk a little bit more about body mass index and what are the caveats, I guess, associated with it?
Yeah. Well, body mass index is pretty good for the averages. So the average person, it could be a good guideline to tell us, are they obese? Are they normal weight? But really, the healthcare practitioner needs to look at the big picture. If you are looking at your patient, and this is a patient that has a lot of muscle, you can visibly see that muscle. They may show up as obese in that BMI scale, but it's because they have so much muscle. So in that sense, it's really a negative thing or not quite the best indicator of obesity. So you really have to look at the big picture, really take a look at your patient. And what I prefer and what we use in the nutrition and fitness space is more so body fat percentage. We really don't use BMI in nutrition and fitness. We go more by body fat percentage. BMI I see used more in doctor's offices in the healthcare field. But as far as nutrition and fitness, we go with body fat percentage because that's going to tell us more. Is this person obese or not? More so than the BMI. A bodybuilder, these guys that are performing on the Olympia stage, BMI wise, they show up as obese. And just by taking a look at them, yeah, I mean, you could see the striations in their muscles because their body fat is so low. So they obviously are not obese.
You brought up a really, really good point, which is measuring body fat percentage. What are your sort of recommendations or suggestions for folks if they're like, you know what, just how much of my body is body fat? Like what, because there's scales, then there's like these little clipper caliber things that you sometimes see people do. There's these handheld gadgets. And then there are more expensive tests that are probably the most accurate, which I've seen, which is like, they sort of like submerge you in water and check what your body fat is. So obviously that may not be a real practical thing for people to be able to go and get done. I believe you could use a DEXA scan, but that is, for all intents and purposes, some radiation exposure. So you just need to be mindful of that. What are your suggestions?
Yeah, so there's different ways we can go about it. You can certainly use one of those body fat scales, but honestly, they are not very accurate at all. So bear that in mind. Really take that data as a grain of salt. But what it is really good at is establishing trends. So if you're using that same body fat scale, let's say it says you have 35% body fat, probably not accurate. But if you continue to use that same scale, you're going to be able to determine, is my body fat trending down? Is it trending up? So that will be pretty accurate what's going on as far as the trends. Other measures, DEXA scan is what we consider pretty much the golden standard in the fitness world. It still has its drawbacks because certain things such as your hydration level is going to kind of skew the results. But of all the body fat measures out there, this is one of the most accurate. The most accurate is the MRI, but that is just about $10,000 or more and just really not realistic. We don't send any of our clients to have MRIs done, but the DEXA scan is a pretty good one where you could do that. Maybe once a year is a good amount of time to do it and see how that's trending. And also if you're working with, let's say, a nutrition professional, a fitness professional, someone with a lot of experience, we can pretty much look at your pictures and kind of determine where you're at. We can kind of just eyeball it, you know, after doing it for so long, like, okay, this person's about 30%. Again, it's not going to be 100% accurate, but we will be able to determine, does this person have an excessive amount of body fat where we need to bring that down to get them to a more healthy body fat percentage?
I love what you're bringing up because I apply that the same way in sleep. So whenever anybody has those sleep trackers and they're like, okay, well, you know, this is my sleep architecture, I encourage folks, don't be obsessed with the numbers that it's telling you, because though it's really not geared toward being like, yes, you're getting exactly this much deep sleep or rapid eye movement sleep or anything. But to your point, it is the trend, and that can be helpful in just also allowing us to, getting back to your earlier point, take a step back from the number says this. This is so daunting. And because I can honestly say when you go on those scales and you're like, you know what? I've been lifting. I'm pretty good shape. I don't have a giant waist. Why is it that I feel like I'm getting on the scale? I'm kind of sad because it's telling me these like horrible numbers where I'm like, there's no way I'm like 50%, but you know, like or whatever, like egregious number in your brain that you think it is. Oh, my body fat's gigantic. But to your point, that trend is really, really, really helpful. So just being mindful that those numbers can sometimes make you feel overwhelmed. And we've all been, I'm definitely guilty of looking at that number on the scale for sure. One of the things that's been talked about, at least in the medical literature, is looking at body mass index and really also looking at your waist to hip ratio. Basically, what you're saying is, listen, if you're gaining all your weight in the middle, that's what we know is going to be worse for you than if you gain it in other places, right? And we all have different shapes and sizes, but as we age, that tends to change, especially for women as we hit perimenopause and menopause. Which is something that's been weighing on me more and more. I wanted to point out something that is a great example of that. So there's something that was called the obesity mortality paradox. And this was a notion that if they were looking specifically at people who had some cardiovascular disease, so some heart disease kind of issues, it was postulated that based on BMI, that if you actually were obese, and you had some of these conditions like heart failure and some kind of pretty serious conditions, that you were less likely to die, right? And people were kind of scratching their heads being like, what? Like, I'm supposed to tell my obese patient they shouldn't be losing weight? That seems like not a good plan, especially if their heart's not optimal. And what they found was, instead of looking at body mass index, let's start going to hip ratio. Let's switch what we're looking at. Let's really look at your waist circumference and incorporate that into it. And what they found was that that paradox really became a myth. When they adjusted for all these confounding variables and they actually found an issue with the body mass index, this correlates exactly with what you're saying, Jackie, which is, it's not the whole picture. It's an estimation. And especially, you know, the most obvious is the very muscular patient, because that person obviously doesn't have a whole lot of body fat, but it can apply in other areas too. So where you're keeping that obesity is really huge in terms of your overall health. And Jackie, you also mentioned, you know, you talked about body composition, but also some of the health biomarkers. So what sort of biomarkers would tell you in a patient, hey, this person really, we need to optimize the nutrition a bit more. We need to get them exercising a little bit more. What are the kind of things that you look for, you incorporate into your thought process?
Well, definitely that body fat percentage. I want my ladies to be under 30%. I want my men to be under 20%. That is kind of a healthy body fat percentage range. As far as lab values, we're going to be looking at things like cholesterol, total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, hemoglobin A1C. We're going to be looking at thyroid function as well, because sometimes people might have a thyroid issue, which is causing them to gain some weight. And if left untreated, that can definitely be an issue. For perimenopausal, menopausal ladies would also take a look at their hormone levels if they think there's something going on with their hormones. So things like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, because we also have testosterone and we want that within a normal range, right? So those are the main things. And also, how is the patient or client feeling? How are their energy levels? How are they sleeping? How are their stress levels? Because that also really affects everything as well. So really taking a look at the big, big picture. And I want to go back to something you specified with the body composition test and that fat around the abdomen. What we want to really keep an eye on and keep low is the visceral fat levels, right? That's that fat around the organs. And that is something we want to make sure is low. That will definitely put you at risk for those things like the cardiovascular disease, hypertension, type 2 diabetes. We want to make sure the visceral fat is low. And one of the things we also check is that waist circumference. Is it going down? What's going on with the measurements? Not just so much that number on the scale, because if the client is gaining muscle and losing fat at the same time, the scale isn't going to really move. It might even go up, but they're going to look leaner. The measurements are going to be going down because muscle's a lot denser than fat. It doesn't take up as much space. So you may weigh the same or more, but you're actually going to look leaner just because of how dense muscle is.
I am telling you, that is 100% true, guys, because I would love to be able to tell you I've watched my scale decrease working with Jackie. If anything, it's increased, but I'm wearing exactly the same clothes. In fact, they fit a little bit looser, and I'm lifting a lot more weight, and I am improving. Jackie knows I've become obsessed with Pilates because it was like one of those things that I could never have time for before in my past life, like Pilates class, like in the morning, like during work hours. That would never happen. So now that I can do it, I've found that it's been the one thing that I can consistently do. And I haven't had any injuries or issues with, like, I pulled my bicep trying to lift too heavy. Like, you know, it's one of those things, just dealing with aging and being kind to my body and not lifting, but being mindful of it. So now I'm really like, okay, it's okay if you're not going as heavy. It's not always about the numbers. I still have that, like, a bit of like that CrossFit mentality that I'm trying to like divorce myself from a little bit, where it's not just like, hey, did I PR this, but rather was I consistent with it, right?
Absolutely.
So one of the things you have taught me that's been so instrumental is the concept of proteins. We're talking about macronutrients, guys. So you can get really granular talking about each little individual nutrient. But globally, when you're counseling someone, we talk about protein, we talk about carbohydrates, we talk about fats. And I really need you to talk about protein, because I still see much of the time when I'm doing some diet education, folks kind of staring at me and their eyes widen like, oh my God, I have to consume how much? And they're not alone, because when you first told me how much, I was like, what are you talking about? How am I going to get that much protein? So please lay it out for folks. And why? Because I think this is key.
Definitely. So protein is one of those macronutrients that you really need to focus on. It is the building block of muscle, the building block of tissue, ligaments, all of that good stuff. Now, especially as we age, it's going to be extremely important, because as we age, we tend to lose muscle mass. That is a normal part of aging. But the good news is we can do things to prevent that. And we can even gain muscle as we age. You certainly can, but you have to have a high protein diet. That's going to be one of those things that's going to protect your muscle mass. And like you mentioned, lift weights. So those things are going to be really, really key to preserve that muscle mass, especially as we age. And something we want to keep an eye on as we age as well is bone density. And by lifting weights, that's really going to improve your bone density, which is very key as we age, especially us in the medical field. Pretty much every week I have patients that have fallen, have fractures because of that bone density. So that is really, really important. We want to make sure we're lifting weights, we are preserving that muscle mass, we're staying strong, and that's going to help us maintain our independence as we age, decrease the risk of fractures as we age. So this stuff is important. This stuff is not just about how you look. It is about how you age, having a good quality of life as you age. But I know I kind of veered a little bit off track, but it's important to state all that. As far as protein levels, so what I suggest to my clients, a good starting range is going to be about 0.7 grams to 1 gram per pound of your goal body weight. So let's say if someone's 300 pounds and their goal body weight is 200 pounds, to eat 300 grams of protein is going to be quite a lot. And then it's not going to really allow them enough of a budget for the other macronutrients. So I would base that off their goal body weight. So I would put them at about 200 grams of protein per day, or maybe 170 grams of protein per day, to have them between that 0.7 grams to 1 gram of total body weight. So that's the goal that you would want to hit your protein. And a good way to do that is to really make protein the superstar of each one of your meals. So every meal is going to be a protein forward meal. You're going to focus on your protein. So for breakfast, things like egg whites, turkey bacon, make sure you're having protein with every single meal. And I also like my clients to eat about 3 or 4 meals a day, because this way you have a chance in each meal to get that protein in, as opposed to people that may eat 1 or 2 meals a day. It's going to be really tough to eat enough protein if you're only eating 2 meals a day.
I love that. And then based on that, she will adjust you know, where you need to be with your carbohydrates, where you need to be with your fats. And the other thing that you've also emphasized and taught me is how important increasing your fiber intake is.
Yes.
So really getting those fruits and veggies to get your fiber intake up. It's amazing because really what it comes down to, what I've figured out, is the more whole foods you consume, the better off you are going to be in being able to be adherent to that. Some of the hacks that you've taught me that I found really helpful are focusing on sometimes making a protein shake, or they even have pre-made protein drinks. I really like the Fairlife brand. That's me. I don't have any issues with dairy or anything. So,
oh, me too.
For me, that's like an easy, and also tastes good. Like not all of them taste good. I've tried all sorts of ones, plant-based ones. And I'm like, some of them are really gross, but some of them are good. One of the other hacks, if you will, that I've read about, and I honestly can't tell you, I know all the data behind it, but we were just talking about this. There is a brand, and I'm not endorsing them in any specific way, just giving you information. It's called Perfect Aminos. I'm sure there's other brands out there, but the idea is that you can get a lot of the sort of essential amino acids that are used as building blocks for protein. And it really doesn't contain a lot of calories. So if you have to kind of hit a certain target and you're looking to at least still get that protein in there, theoretically, you could try something like that or supplementing with something like that. I think those are such key points. Now, we've also talked about resistance training, and also where does cardio fit in? You've actually had me stay away for most of what we've been doing together, away from the real high intensity stuff. We've been focusing on just getting those steps in even, or getting that low intensity cardiovascular. You do need to do that. You got to exercise the heart as a muscle as well. I've heard different schools of thought in terms of like, you know, some people only do it when they're doing like their fat loss phase and they up the cardio and then they sort of slow that down. Where do you think for overall longevity and health people should be targeting? Just as much, you know, in addition to the weight training, if you will.
Yeah. Well, it's really going to depend on the person, on their goals, on the time they have to dedicate to exercise. One of the first things I ask my clients when they start with me, how much time, how many days a week can you realistically exercise? Because we have to give them a plan that they can stick to and adhere to. Because bottom line, the adherence and the consistency is most important than anything else. So if you tell me, yes, I'm going to work out 6 days a week and I'm going to do cardio every single day, I'm going to go for a jog daily, and you have two jobs and three kids, and I mean, really, how realistic is that? So first of all, let's determine what are your main goals. Let's determine how much time do you have to dedicate to exercise, and then kind of take it from there. So I really take an individualized approach because everyone's situation is different and how much time they have. But absolutely, cardiovascular fitness is also important. As far as order of priority, I say resistance training is going to come first, and then cardiovascular fitness. Yes, you need to still at least walk every day, be active every day. But as far as times to do cardio, especially in a fat loss phase, we want to prioritize that resistance training, because when you are in a caloric deficit, you're going to, if you don't lift weights, and if you don't eat enough protein, you're going to lose weight, but the goal is to lose fat. So if you don't prioritize resistance training and prioritize protein, you're going to lose fat and muscle. So we want to mitigate that or kind of decrease the risk of that by prioritizing lifting and by prioritizing protein intake. And that's why I really push that. Most of my clients are in a fat loss phase when they start with me. So that's kind of why I do it that way. And then we do incorporate cardio depending on their schedule and what they have time for. But they're both important. Lifting and cardiovascular exercise are both important.
We've talked more about like sort of the practicalities of doing some of this. But when Jackie's talking about a caloric deficit, one of the things to keep in mind is you don't want to be in a caloric deficit forever, right? So part of it is that you're going to a caloric deficit for a period of time, and then you're allowing yourself to quote unquote rebound. But part of that is, you know, there's a stepwise progression, I guess, to fat loss that people should know about. And, you know, again, this all takes time. So the other point that I'd like to hear your thoughts on is the idea of reshaping things. Like, I'm doing a quote diet to achieve a quote goal. And then what happens after that? I feel like the what happens after that is the what gets translated.
That is an excellent point. And that is something a lot of people struggle with. So people go on this diet, right? With really no instruction, not really knowing what they're doing, just kind of following a random thing or just drastically decreasing their calories. And to your point, yes, a fat loss phase is a phase. You are not meant to diet your entire life. Calories are units of energy. We need energy in order to perform optimally. So a fat loss phase is a short period of time. I usually will do between 3 or 6 months, depending on the client, depending how much fat they have to lose. And during that time, we work on this goal. Once you are done, so in order to lose fat, for your viewers that don't know, you have to eat less calories than you're burning. So that's what we call a calorie deficit. That's how we achieve fat loss, right? So after this 3 to 6 month period, we have to end the diet. You're not meant to be eating in a calorie deficit forever. It causes stress on your body. And in the long term, your metabolic rate will decrease. We don't want that. We are meant to diet and then get out of the diet. Now, this is where a lot of traditional diets fail because there's no exit strategy. So what happens is when people do not focus on those habits, so the habits are going to stay the same whether you're dieting or not dieting. This is when I say this is a lifestyle, right? So we want to maintain the same habits. We want to eat a nutrient-dense diet whether or not you're in a fat loss phase or not. So we want high protein, high fiber. We want to incorporate those daily steps, make sure we are moving. We want to make sure we are lifting weights. We want to make sure we are sleeping enough. That's where you come in. So all of these things we want to incorporate every single day. Now, the only difference is now that the diet is over, we're going to kind of increase those calories back up. But those habits are going to stay the same. And that's where a lot of people really fail because they don't change their lifestyle. They do this drastic thing for however long. And then they go back to their normal habits. And when that happens, we know the statistics. A lot of people, most people gain all that weight back, maybe even more so, especially when they do those drastic diets, because now you lost muscle. Now you slowed down your metabolism. Now you go back to all these unhealthy habits and you're just going to regain all of that and even more. So it's really important to focus on those lifestyle healthy habits.
So why the heck is a sleep doctor talking so much about diet and health? Well, in all truth, I think it is really, when I think about sleep, I think about sleep so much as being prevention. And I think about diet as being so key, and also movement and exercise. And if you don't believe me, look at the American Health Association. They have the Life's Essential 8 out there. It used to be the Life's Essential 7, but they updated it, and number 8 is sleep. Oh, yeah.
Yay.
So if you're not getting sufficient sleep, so insufficient sleep is a big issue. Also, too much time in bed is also an issue. But the bottom line is it's about sleep duration, and we're finding sleep quality is also very important. If you are somebody who is very overweight or in the obese category, and you kind of know it's not because you're a bodybuilder, it's a real actual unit of issue for you. What we know is you may be more prone to things like sleep disordered breathing. Sleep apnea is very common and unfortunately very underdiagnosed. I can treat your sleep apnea by using all sorts of tools, putting you on PAP therapy, you know, a machine for your breathing. We use oral appliances. We use all these different gadgets, positional therapy, sometimes surgeries, etc. But one of the things I always talk to my patients about is the importance of really looking at yourself and knowing that while sleep apnea is often a musculature issue of the upper airway, the reality is that for many Americans, there is a strong weight component because we have such a crisis in our country of people being obese. So if you can lose that weight, and again, by weight, I mean, let's get the fat down, but maintain muscle, which is what I really try to emphasize to my patients, your sleep apnea might go away. So, but in the interim, I like to do things in parallel because, as you can tell by talking to Jackie, the weight loss is not like magical. Like you don't blink your eyes and suddenly you have no fat. This is a really long process. And again, a change in your lifestyle, a change in how you view food, and a change in how you view exercise. I think that mindset shift is very hugely helpful.
Yes.
And we've talked about this. Allison, schedule it in. And I'm like, okay, well, I can schedule 800 other things into my life. I got to schedule it in. I am penciled in for today. Later on today, I got to exercise. That's what I got to do. So I really try to look at my day and where I can fit it in. And then if I'm having a really crazy day where I'm just going to choose to have that down, like yesterday was, I'm going to call it my, as you say, this was more relaxing because it's like a home Pilates class that I do. So I did that really early. So I did get a workout in, but it wasn't nearly as intense as when I go to the actual place. But for me, that was like, I'm otherwise going to be crazy busy. That's going to be my exercise for the day. Today is going to look a little bit different. We're going to be looking more at weights and everything, but just really penciling that in, right? So you're penciling exercise and then the nutrition, find things that you like. And believe me, it's hard, but you can get that protein. I have been so much better about it. And that took me a long time to get on board with that much protein. It was really hard. You want to pencil in sleep, if you will. You want to make that a pillar and a priority. And believe me, your workouts are going to be better. As somebody who, I don't know what it is, like sort of to my late 40s, everything like now, like it takes me that the delayed onset muscle soreness, like I get that a lot more. It's a lot better with better sleep and prioritizing the sleep and also prioritizing the protein. So that, cause that's like where your muscles are breaking, you know, you sort of have created a little bit of inflammation, which is a healthy inflammation. And now your muscles are trying to kind of build and grow stronger. So it's really important to think about whether or not you have a sleep disorder as you work with someone like Jackie and decide to embark on a lifestyle change. Because if there's a sleep disorder, treating that actually makes your sleep better. It helps you make better food choices. So sleep and your diet and exercise, all that's interrelated, which is why we're talking about that. So Jackie, what are your final words? What would you like to tell the audience as we wrap this up today?
I think that that was a great little statement you said there. Absolutely. All of those things are important. Your sleep is important. Your nutrition is important. Your exercise programming is important. And to your point, schedule it because we are so busy. And if we don't prioritize it, it's not going to get done. So I take a look at my schedule on Sundays. I look at my calendar for the week. When do I have meetings? What do the kids have going on? And I schedule it on Sundays. Okay, these are the days I'm going to work out. I have it in my calendar, and it is like a meeting that I cannot miss. So you really need to prioritize that and be very mindful of how much you're moving, how many steps are you doing? Because if you don't do that, it is just so easy for life to kind of get in the way, and then you don't get this done, and now your health is kind of taking a back seat, and you want to make that number one priority is your health. So yes, absolutely. And as far as where people can find me, if you want me to give that information.
Sure.
Yeah. So I'm a Team BioLane coach. So you can find me on Instagram at Nutrition with Nurse Jackie is my page. It's a public page. You can all go ahead and follow me. And I provide a lot of educational content on all of these topics. And you can also email me if you'd like to work with me. I do nutrition coaching. I write customized training programs for those people that would like that. So you could do that as well. And my email is jacqueline@biolane.com.
And Jackie's going to be writing me an exercise program because I need a little bit more structure. I have to constantly be thinking of these, like what I'm going to do. And I'm not good at that to be, you know, like I'm like, okay, well, I know the big complex lifts and I do work on those. But sometimes just the smaller stuff, I'm like, okay, especially stuff where I know I'm like, I got to be held accountable. Like I hate Bulgarian split squats. I really hate those. I do. But I know that they're really good for me and I need to do them because you're stabilizing all the other muscles so that you can squat healthier and, you know, just be safe out there. So, and by the way, Jackie, is it true you are 50 and you have like 3 kids and you're working full time? I mean,
yes.
So it can be done. So swoon, like this is one of the reasons I really enjoyed working with her because it's somebody who understands. This whole conversation is applicable to everyone, but I'm going to be biased in saying, especially if you're a lady that's like in our age group, sort of 40s, getting into the 50s, listen to this, absorb it. You're mature enough to know what I'm saying actually makes sense. you know it's really hard to break, you know, bad habits, but you can do it. Trust me on that. So thank you. This has been so much fun. I appreciate you. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. This was super fun.
Hello to all my fellow sleep biohackers out there. I have a call to action for you. If you are enjoying this podcast, if you feel that you are growing, you're more knowledgeable, you're feeling empowered about your sleep, that is the purpose. So please, please take the time to like and review the podcast, share it amongst your friends and family. Please follow me. If you'd like to follow me on Instagram or Facebook, I am there as well. My handle on Instagram and TikTok is AskTheSleepMD. And you can also go to my website, AskTheSleepMD.com, for more information about each of these episodes. We will be sharing with you cited articles that you can actually refer to and read yourself if you like, and lots of juicy tidbits about how to sleep better. Thank you. This podcast is made possible with the exquisite talents of Mr. Joey Salvia, my producer, Mr. Adrian Pederath, my creative director, and music by Lori Kunzel of KunzelMusic.com. Disclaimer: the statements made on this podcast have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food or Drug Administration. They are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. The information provided by this podcast should not be used as individual medical advice. While I am a practicing sleep provider, I am not your sleep provider. You should always consult with your personal healthcare provider for individual recommendations and treatment.